A very warm welcome to all of you to day two of Wide Moat Investing Summit 2019. I very much look forward to starting this day with a very special instructor based in Madrid. Luis Garcia Alvarez is an equity portfolio manager at MAPFRE AM, the asset management unit of the global insurance company MAPFRE Group. He previously worked at Banco Santander as a market risk analyst and at BBVA as a senior equity research analyst. Luis is also co-director of the executive program in value investing and behavioral finance at ICADE Business School. He holds a bachelor's degree in economics from the Francisco de Vitoria University, a master's degree in economics and finance from CEMFI, and a value investing diploma awarded by the Ben Graham Chair at Richard Ivey School of Business. Luis is a CFA charter holder and has co-authored a series of papers on the field of finance. We are truly grateful that Luis has shared his insights and ideas with us in the past, including presentations on Ferrovial and Maryland properties, as well as an article on the field of neuroeconomics, all of which I highly recommend, and they're available on the MOI Global website. So on behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome back to you, Luis. Please go ahead.
Hello, John, and thank you very much for your introduction. It's very nice to speak to you again. Thank you for your invitation to contribute to the 2019 MOI White Mode Investing Summit. Well, I hope you enjoy my presentation, and I'm very much looking forward to watching the presentation for the rest from the rest of instructor. So I'm sure I will learn a lot during the summit. So well, I think that this is the first time I'm doing a presentation at an MOI Global conference since the MAPFRE AM Behavioral Fund has been officially launched. So I'm very happy about that, and I would like to take the first 3 minutes of my presentation just to tell you a little bit how we manage the MAPFRE AM Behavioral Fund and what are our ideas on how to incorporate behavioral finance into portfolio management. So so I will go very briefly through this, and then I will start with the presentation of our investing idea. So first of all, well, you already know my colleague, Michael Morosi, who has already contributed to some of the summits at MOI Global. And I would like to explain you very briefly how do we think about portfolio management, and what do we think that makes us a little bit different to other mutual funds that are in Spain or in Europe. So first of all, is this cognitive diversity. So, well, Michael is comes from the US, he's American. I come from, well, I'm Spanish, and so I have more an European mind. So this combination of two different styles, and also we have experience both in the sell side and on the buy side, Michael in the US and Asia, myself in Europe. So that makes this it quite funny to work every day and to see how we see things quite similar in the sense of our investing philosophy, but also quite different because of our different geographical backgrounds. Also the alignment of incentives. So I think this is key. MAPFRE, our parent company, which is one of the largest insurance companies in Spain and in Latin America, has invested its own capital in the fund since inception, and they continue to invest in our fund. And also, Michael and I, ourselves, for sure, we invest the majority of our personal wealth in our fund. We think that alignment of incentives is key, and we look for it in the companies that we invest in. And obviously, we require the same for ourselves. Third would be our definition of value investing. So we always say that we can invest either in good companies at an excellent price or in excellent companies at a good price. And actually, we are a little bit more skewed towards the second group. Okay, so we leave aside deep value investing, which I think there is people that can do it very well, but not Michael and I. So we prefer to go for more for the quality side, but we also acknowledge that quality has a price. So so we try to avoid overpaying, which is one of the main reasons for making mistakes in investing. And finally, well, for that very special Mafra-EM Behavioral Fund, which I guess is one of the first investment funds in Europe that use behavioral finance as the main theme, we have created an advisory board with experts in the field of behavioral finance and neuroeconomics. So, for example, Pedro Bermejo, he is the president of the Spanish Association for Neuroeconomics. Pedro Reybiel, PhD from Imperial College in the UK, and also part-time professor in University of California, San Diego. Well, all other experts in behavioral finance that help us to define our investing process, and also to keep updated on the state of the art of the on the literature of behavioral finance. So, well, I have already said that this is a fund that tries to use behavioral finance to make better investment decisions. So actually we split that into two phases. So first we try to identify the biases of other investors, and we try to, well, to study them and to see where are your opportunities for investing. And the other thing we do is we try to protect ourselves from our own biases, because knowing them and studying them does not keep us protected from having these biases, because we are humans. So we try to define our process in a way that we build certain steps that can help us protect from making these mistakes. So on the first part, on how we try to identify mistakes that other investors can make and then can lead to interesting investing opportunities and to mispricing of certain assets, we mainly identify seven strategies that are the ones that you can see in the screen in slide three. So first one would be overreaction. So behavioral finance literature has proven that negative news tend to travel fast. So investors, we tend to overreact to negative news. And in that sense, well, that usually affect sectors, industries, and then you have to do your work and study all the companies one by one. And from time to time, you find really interesting opportunities there. The opposite happens with positive news. So the second thing we do is we're trying to find underreaction to positive news. So many times positive news start flowing in and investors are not able to react quickly to that. Third thing we do, so the third strategy is we try to find forced sellers. So we always try to understand what our counterparty is thinking when we do a trade. And one thing we really like to do is try to find situations where there are forced sellers. And a very typical situation where you find forced sellers are in spin-offs. So divisions of a larger company that is segregated and start and is listed by itself. So we have we have at least three or four of these examples in the portfolio right now. Then, well, we usually do not look at the cycles of the economy, which are quite difficult to predict, but we do look at human behavior through the cycle of a given industry. So management teams usually behave in a predictable way during the cycle, and that translates into a CapEx cycle. So if you are able to study the point in the CapEx cycle where you are right now, it can give you a hedge to find an investing opportunity. And it is in this sense, well, this very well-known book that is called Capital Returns is a very interesting place to read about how to do this and how to understand the CapEx cycle in a given industry. Strategy number five, we tend to we try to find forgotten stocks. So stocks nobody is paying attention to, and there are many companies in the portfolio that we have right now that that they don't have a sell side analyst, or they have one or two. I always say that one of the companies that we have and that Michael presented at the Best Ideas conference in MOA Global is QAD, a US software company. And that company used to have only two analysts in the sell side, and now they only have one because the other analyst was Michael, that is now working with us. So this is a very special kind of situation where nobody's paying attention to a given stock. Well, then you can probably find some inefficiencies there and mispricing of this stock. Strategy number six, well, I already anticipated that, but we look at to companies where the incentives of the management are aligned to the incentives of the shareholders. And this is the reason why there are many companies in the portfolio that we have right now that are family owned, because this is a very typical example where the management team and the owners of the company are the same family. And in these cases, the incentives to make them create value for the company are very well aligned with the ones of the shareholders. And finally, we also try to understand these market narratives that sometimes make all investors think the same way. Like, right now, there is this narrative about the electric vehicle, also this narrative about Amazon just destroying every single retailer in the world. So we try to dig a little bit deeper and try to see whether within these market narratives that, well, usually they are kind of right, but but not perfect. So so while they are not perfect, sometimes they allow you to find interesting opportunities if you're trying to find an edge where the market is just not understanding things right. And second, as I told you, well, we have already talked about the external way of incorporating behavioral finance into our process, but let me tell you just a quick words on how we incorporate behavioral finance internally, Michael and I, in our day-to-day, how we protect us from ourselves. So first of all, and I have already mentioned that, we have an advisory board that helps us to design our investment process. This has also another advantage, which is talking to people that are not portfolio managers or buy-side analysts or sell-side analysts. The people that we have in the advisory board, they don't work in the finance industry. So this is very interesting because sometimes we live in a bubble, and we like to go away of the bubble and talk to other people that is not as influenced as we are by the latest news in the Financial Times or the Wall Street Journal. So this is a good way of finding investment opportunities. Second, we do a checklist. So we once we have built our investment thesis, we try to answer to several questions like, well, are we within the, do we think honestly that we are within the people that understand this industry the best globally? Does the company comply with the usual requirements or the usual characteristics that we like in a company, et cetera, et cetera. So this is also a way to make it objective, to go again through all the characteristics of our investment and reinforce our investment thesis and try to keep it away from human biases. Then we also do this devil advocates exercise, in which once we have built the investment thesis, so we just try to destroy it. And if the investment thesis survives to Michael and I trying to just destroy it, then it's probably a good investing opportunity and will go into the portfolio. Fourth is that each of us, we have a veto power. So in the sense that we never take investment decisions alone. It is better to take it after one, we talk one to the other, because this compensates this kind of days where you are having a hard day and you want to sell everything, or you are having a very good day and you want to buy everything. So the personality of one and the other compensates a little bit in this sense. Then leaving the bubble, I already talked about that. Talking to other people that is not in the portfolio management. In the portfolio management industry, and the final two, mindful investing and keep a balanced life. That's more on the same side. So we always try to avoid making an investing decision if we are not in the right mental state. We are not quite. So if we feel that we are not in the right mood to take an investment decision, and we are not cold enough, so we prefer to wait a little bit, look for another moment where we are in a better mental state, and then take the decision. So we are not in a hurry to make the decisions. Just be patient and try to find the moments where you are in a better position to think clearly about the investment thesis. So well, after all this introduction to the MAFRE EM Behavioral Fund, which I hope you enjoyed, and I'm now going to start with the presentation of the investment idea that I have prepared for today. So I let me tell you that I'm going to tell you about a company that has a visionary founder that served as CEO of the company. This company also has a strong corporate culture. Another characteristic is that they have a very strong attention to the design of its hardware. And finally, they are continuously trying to innovate. And they have an open platform for apps of other companies. So with all that, you may think that I am going to speak about Apple, but don't worry, this is not another presentation about Apple, which you already know for sure. The company that I want to talk to you about is Tecnogym, which is an Italian provider of gym equipment. So the visionary founder and CEO is not Steve Jobs, but Nerio Alessandrini, which is the founder and current CEO of Tecnogym. The headquarters I'm interested in are not Cupertino, but the Tecnogym headquarters in Cesena in Italy. The design is not the design of the iPhone or the iPad, it's the design of Tecnogym equipment, which, well, they are Italian, so they know how to do beautiful products. And finally, the constant innovation is not the innovation of the iOS, it's more the My Wellness Cloud open platform. So Tecnogym started to do work and talk about the cloud and the data many years ago. And this is a company that does not only offer products, which are the gym equipment, but they also offer solutions, and this is what makes it unique, and this is what makes it a wide moat company in our view, and I will tell you more about that later on. So first of all, let me frame Technogym within the world that we live nowadays. So unfortunately, I would say our level of sedentary and unhealthy lifestyle has increased during the recent decades. So obesity is now a problem, as you see in that front page of the Economist, and then and also in the map that you have on the right hand side of the slide. And also people is starting to pay more and more attention to things that we didn't pay attention to some decades ago, like, well, we want to lose weight, we want to improve our posture while we are working at the office, we want to be fit, we want to gain muscle mass, we want to improve our athletic performance, reduce our stress, prevent injuries, and so on and so on. So these are all things that lead to many, many more people signing up in a gym and trying to have a healthy life. Not only millennials and young people, but also other segments of the population. So first impression is that this should be positive for a company that provides equipment for gyms. These new ways of living and these new trends, they have their consequences. So for example, first, there is a growing interest in personal care and well-being, and Technogym created around two decades ago this concept of wellness that mixes fitness and welfare. Then second, we need prevention and care for an aging population. So the pyramid, the population pyramid is changing, and there is more and more aging population. Third, there is an increasing number of government programs that try to control healthcare costs. So as population is aging and as we are having new injuries, new diseases, and so on, and we so the healthcare costs are increasing globally, and this is a problem for the governments. So governments are starting to think about policies to incentivize people to go more to the gym, to have a healthy life, etc. And fourth, it's not only governments that care about this, it's also corporations. So many corporations are starting to pay or subsidize the gym fees to their employees, because they want them to do more exercise and to have a healthier life, because, well, a healthier employee probably is a more productive one. So after framing the world in which we live and how this affects Technogym, let me tell you a little bit about the story of the company. So I already anticipated that Technogym is a family business. It was founded by Nerio Alessandri and his brother in a garage in Italy in 1983, when Nerio was just 22 years old. Nerio, as I said, is the founder. It is the current CEO. It still holds 45% of the company, and it has a majority of the voting rights. Okay, so, well, Nerio, I had the chance to meet Nerio in Madrid some months ago when they came to for the inauguration the inauguration of their flagship store in Madrid. They did a meeting with some investors, and it was funny because it was the IR started the IR of the company started the presentation, and I was shocked to see Nerio taking notes of everything that I have said, and then passing these notes to another person in the company, just continuously trying to improve the presentation and trying to improve how they communicate with investors. And the other thing is that, well, after the meeting, Michael and I had the chance to talk a little bit to Nerio, more personally. And he told us that it was the first time that he was meeting investors outside Italy, and that he couldn't even sleep the night before. So it was funny that a guy that is the owner of half of a $2 billion market cap company was so nervous before meeting investors. And that gives you an idea of how aligned he is with creating value for the company, because this is his company, this is kind of his own child, his project of life. He's actually a visionary. He has been ahead of the industry for many years. He has written that book that I saw you in the slide, that is in Italian, but hopefully someday they will translate it into English. And if not, my proposal is that I include a chapter about Nerio in the next edition of the Outsiders book, that is about extraordinary CEOs. So if they try to find an extraordinary CEO in Europe, probably Nerio would be a candidate. So that was that was how Technogene was founded almost 30 years ago. So since the moment the company was founded, it has been a story of magnificent growth. More than 25% cumulative annual growth rate in revenues. It's not only about extraordinary growth, it is also that it has become an aspirational brand for many people. So Technogene is the leader in gym equipment in Europe, not only to regular gyms, but also to private gyms that are in the houses of famous people like Fernando Alonso, the Formula One driver, Cristiano Ronaldo, Neymar, Rafael Nadal, the tennis player, Marc Márquez, the motorcycler. And also, Technogene is a provider of many important teams, like the Brazilian national soccer team. Also Lewis Hamilton, the Formula One driver, uses Technogene at home. So there is many important people in the area of sports that they use Technogene. You can see in this slide the examples of Fernando Alonso and Cristiano Ronaldo, but if you look in the internet, you will find many more. So this is it has actually become an aspirational brand in sports and fitness. But this is partially the reason why this is a wide moat company, because of the brand recognition. But what I would say that really makes this company have a wide moat is the use of data. So what I will explain in this slide. So this is probably the most important slide from my point of view of all the presentation. So Technogene is a company that provides gym equipment, but they do not only provide products, they also provide services and solutions to the gym clubs and to the gym club managers. Two things. Well, at the left-hand side of the presentation, you can see a chart that tries to describe this concept of wellness on the go that is already increasing, and that has to do with the fact that we want to be aware of our state of health wherever we are and at any point in time. We want to exercise in a hotel if we are on a travel. We want to know the rhythm of our heartbeat wearing an intelligent bracelet or an intelligent watch. So Technogene has created its own open platform where other providers of app like Under Armour or Garmin or Polar can, or even Apple can incorporate their apps. So this is a way of telling people, hey, we are going to be with you at the not only at the gym, but also at home or while you are in the street, on the road, also at the doctor. I mean, trying to recollect data about the things that we do during the whole day. And then this data can be used by the doctor for a better diagnosis and a better treatment. Also at work. So this is an important part of what Technogene offers, this open platform. And there is another really important part, which is the fact that Technogene, if a gym club buys Technogene equipment, Technogene also offers the possibility of having ERP and CRM with its own software. So Technogene bought an ERP company some years ago, which was called Excerpt, and they also developed their own CRM platform, which is called My Wellness Cloud. So the moment you sign up with a gym that has Technogene equipment, they give you either a special dispositive or an intelligent watch or something that keeps you connected with the equipment of the gym. By the way, this is my case, and this was the reason why we found this idea. I signed to a gym club some months ago, and I was struck that all the gym equipment was provided by Technogene. So I talked to the gym club manager, and he told me that they were running their ERP and their CRM with Technogene. So I told you this is important, and I told you this is the reason why the company has a wide moat, which comes from a huge switching cost. Because if these kind of gyms, and there are many, because Technogene is a leader in Europe, want to switch from Technogene equipment to another equipment, it's not only that they need to switch the hardware, I mean the equipment, it's also that they need to switch all the data that we have in the ERP and CRM. But this is not so easy. I mean, changing the equipment is costly, but maybe easy. But changing all the data that you have from your clients and from your accounting and so on, that's more difficult. So in that sense, I think about Technogene about more as a software company and as a provider of solutions than and not only as a gym equipment provider that makes very beautiful equipment and has become an aspirational brand, which is also important. So what I told you, I told you that this is a software company, and I told you that, well, software and equipment company, and I told you why this is important and why they have a huge switching cost. But also, they have been growing like crazy in the last decades, but they still have a lot of room to grow. I mean, especially in regions where their presence is already limited. It's limited by now, sorry. So Technogene is the leader in Europe, but their presence in Asia and in North America is quite limited. And these areas, the fitness equipment market in these areas is expected to grow a lot in the coming years. And within that, Technogene can take advantage of that. Up to now, they have been in the process of becoming the leader in Europe. And I think that now they are thinking about going to the next step and trying to gain market share in the US. Of course, that will involve some investment in Salesforce in the US. But I think that they have come to a point with the, when they are ready for that, and that will be significantly value accretive. So, well, I already mentioned the distribution by geography of the revenue of Technogym. So as you can see, more than half of the revenue comes from Europe, excluding Italy, which is their local market. If you add up Italy, of course, it is even more. And North America and Asia, their business there is still very limited. And that markets are huge, and that markets are growing. And it is not that they have already tried and they have failed. It's more that they were not interested in trying yet, and now they are becoming to a point where they are starting to be interested in taking their equipment and their software solutions to these geographical areas. And if they are able to do that, that would be a great success and a great source of value creation. And what is more important, and we don't think that this is incorporated in the price right now. We will tell you more about that later on. So the revenue, that was the revenue by geography and the revenue by segment. So we have to say that Technogym is a leader in providing gym clubs, but their penetration in residential is still very limited. And this has to do also with the geographical mix, because people that build a gym in their own home are more in North America than in Europe. So the moment Technogym starts to increase the market share in North America, we expect that number to go up. And this is a company that is able to generate a significant amount of cash flow. So they have been investing a lot in the last decades in innovation and in software, and they are at the point in a point now where they are many years ahead of their peers. So they don't need to invest a lot right now in our view. And actually they are investing at a moderate rate. So CapEx is around 3 or 4% of the current sales, and we expect that to continue that way. There can be one-offs for sure, but then the regular level should be around 3 to 4% of the sales. And they are increasing EBITDA. They are generating cash, and they are being able to reduce net debt. And actually, we expect this company to become net cash positive maybe this year or in 2020. So this is also something that we like a lot, because we like companies with a solid balance sheet. And this is the one that generates a ton of cash, so the level of debt is very reduced, and actually they are going to be cash positive at some point in time in the near future. So coming to the valuation, and I'm about to be finished with the presentation. Well, of course, if you look at the multiples of Technogym and you think about this company just as a gym equipment providers, it may look expensive at first. But if you look at this company as a company that also provides services and that has a really wide moat in terms of switching costs, and that has the opportunity to gain market share in markets that are huge like the US and China, where they are not already there, so they will start trying now. Then I think that the market multiples right now are actually not so expensive for a company like this. So let's see what the market is pricing in and what they are not pricing in at the moment. So we think that the market is discounting just a very moderate level of growth in the US. And there can, we can see the case for a stronger growth in the US and also in Asia that will lead to further value creation. The market is also discounting right now that they just maintain market share in Europe. I think that they can even gain some market share, but the other important thing that they can do is start monetizing this open platform for healthy apps that we have already mentioned a couple of slides ago. So right now they are not charging anything in this open platform. So, but because they are at the stage of collecting a lot of data and attracting a lot of apps to the open platform, but I can see that there will be a moment where they can start monetizing this platform. Also, the market is pricing in just moderate operating leverage. And we can see there is a case for a significant improvement in the margins. I think that there is a company, this is a company that by definition, they have significant operating leverage. So if they are able to grow in some of the markets where they want to grow, which are the US, Asia, but also Brazil and Mexico, which are important markets for the fitness industry, I think that the improvement in margins will be significant. So the market is pricing in approximately 12 times EV to EBITDA, actually a bit less right now because the price has dropped recently. And this is the price that was paid for Cybex some months ago in a private transaction. And Cybex is only gym equipment, so they don't have this huge switching cost advantage that TechnoGym has as a solution provider. And also TechnoGym is more an aspirational brand than Cybex is. So I think that it should trade at a premium for sure to that company, and that it is worth a higher multiple. So just to sum up all our investment thesis, we think that TechnoGym is a high quality company with a significant switching cost that is managed by an outsider as Nerio is, and by an outsider that has significant skin in the game, not only because he owns almost half of the shares, but also because he really loves what he does, and this company for him is like his life. So he really has aligned incentives and a strong skin in the game. It's a company with almost no net debt. So as I told you before, this is becoming cash positive in the next months or maybe a year or so. And this is also something that we like. And there is a strong potential in data management that they, well, partially it is already there in the sense that they have ERP and CRM and this leads to a high switching cost, but the potential of monetizing the open platform is not there yet. So they are not monetizing the platform at the moment. They are getting more and more people to use it and more apps to be interested in being in the platform. And we can see that actually there is a huge potential because of the data that they get from many people that exercise with technology and equipment, that can be interesting for example, for insurance companies that are starting to launch insurance products, where the premium that you pay depends on the level of exercise that you are able to do during a month or during a year. And I can see that this data can also be interesting for many other people. So this is, as I said, not only an equipment provider. This is an equipment provider that is aspirational and that has also an advantage in software and a huge potential in data management. So I use the analogy of the Olympics to finish the presentation with the 5 points where we see that technology can grow in the future, which are digital, monetization of the platform, wide mode and switching cost from the ERP and CRM software, then increasing its market share in residential especially in the US, but also in other countries as Brazil and Mexico. Then all the global trends about health that are being incorporated by governments and also by corporations. And finally, well, US and China, these are two huge markets. Technology is not already there, but they don't have a sales presence there, but people in US and China can see Cristiano Ronaldo or Lewis Hamilton or all these very famous sportmen exercising with technology equipment. So I guess that they will be able to increase market share in these two huge markets. And that's all from my side. So thank you very much, John.
Lewis, thank you very much for the interesting presentation. A reminder to everyone on the line, if you have a question, feel free to type it into the online interface at this time. Lewis, if I may, just a clarification. I don't know if this is public knowledge, but you mentioned people like Cristiano Ronaldo and Lewis Hamilton. Do you know if they have any kind of a formal agreement with TechnoGym, or do they simply use the equipment and TechnoGym can benefit from the association?
I imagine there are some of these people that they do have an agreement with TechnoGym. This is not public information. I don't know. I have the feeling that some of them may have a public agreement, but it is true that there is other people that they don't have an agreement with TechnoGym, and they also use it. So it was funny because there is a very famous social network influencer here in Spain, who's a woman, and she was married to a famous singer here in Spain. And the other day, a friend of mine sent me a photo that she has posted in Instagram, and she was at home with a lot of gym equipment, and all the equipment was from TechnoGym. So I imagine that these people, they don't have an agreement with TechnoGym. They just use it because it is an aspirational brand, and it is probably one of the best providers of gym equipment.
If we can talk a little bit more about capital allocation, do you expect the company to retain all cash flow for the foreseeable future and reinvest in expansion, or do you see any other uses of capital?
That will probably be the case in the coming years. So if as they are willing to expand in the US and China, of course this requires some capex, in the sense that they will probably need to hire some sales people in the US and China that they don't have right now. It is true that they are foreseeing the expansion in a way that is not very capital intense, because they are just reaching agreements with other providers in the US so that they can start proving if things are, if there is really an interest for technology and equipment, which I guess there is. They are probably going to continue reducing debt, and they will accumulate some cash. This is a company that has not been very active in M&A, with the only exception maybe of these of the acquisition of the ERP business some years ago. But what I would expect in the future is maintaining the level of recurrent capex around 3 or 4% of sales, having certain one-offs that would probably come from the expansion in the, especially in the US, and then continue to accumulate debt, cash. I mean, if they don't find a way to reinvest that cash, just distributing it to shareholders.
We have a member writing in that one could argue that part of the sales come from sales to residential estates and perhaps making TechnoGym linked to the real estate development market. Do you have any thoughts on trends and whether that's the case?
As I said, the current market share in the residential market of Technogym is very low, and this is partially explained by the fact that their presence in the US is quite limited. So houses at the US tend to be larger, so more people build a gym at home. In Europe, as you know, this is a little bit more difficult to build a big gym at home. So it is true probably that the dynamics of the residential market in the US are not the best right now, and maybe could deteriorate a bit in the future. I'm not an expert on that, but it looks a little bit clear that we are reaching a point where this can happen. The thing is that, I mean, there the market share of Technogym is really very low at the moment. So they need to, I mean, this is a process that will take some years. They need to go there. They need to get the people to know them. And hopefully more and more people will start building a gym at home with Technogym equipment. So although there are some negative dynamics in the residential market in the US, I think that the market is so huge that even with Technogym gaining just a tiny market share there, that will be very significant in terms of the revenue for the company.
Could you talk a little bit about your idea generation process and how you discovered the idea, please?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in general, we find the ideas in many different ways. We run screens, we pay attention to the things that are around us in our daily life. We read reports for sure. We talk to another portfolio managers that are our friends. We pay a lot of attention to the MOI global conferences. So actually, there are some ideas in the portfolio that come from presentations of other managers in MOI global conferences. But in this particular case of Technogym, it is funny because, as I said before, I sign up in a gym and I started looking at all the equipment, and actually all the equipment was by Technogym. So this was something that shocked me. So I started digging a little bit and trying to find a bit more about the company. So that discovery was more of a Peter Lynch style. You know, Peter Lynch says that many investing ideas came from the observation of the daily life, and also what his wife did, and some things that his wife bought that were products that she liked. Mainly, I mean, it was almost at the same time. Michael, which now lives in the city center of Madrid, came across the new flagship store that Technogym was opening in Madrid, which was the first one. So each of us independently started reading a bit more and trying to know more about the company. And one day we came to the office and we said, you know, I have been reading about this Italian company that looks very interesting. And the other one said, well, that's funny because I have been doing the same. So we came to that idea in two different ways. But the source of idea generation was the same, which was Peter Lynch style, looking at the things that are around you in your daily life.
Can you talk a little bit more about the valuation and how you think about that? You talked about the multiples there. To what extent do you think multiple expansion is realistic? And if the multiple stays the same, what kind of an underlying growth would you expect going forward?
Yeah, sure. This is a company we don't usually use target price. This is the target prices first. We use ranges of valuation. And this is a company where coming to a range of valuation, but by trying to predict the future is especially difficult because we don't know the rhythm and the size of the expansion in the US and the rhythm and the size of expansion in China, how much they will monetize from the open platform for applications, how much these health trends will improve in the future. So we see all these issues as positive optionalities in the future. We look at the current multiple, and within this, as you said, within that the multiple may be kind of right. So what we see as expanding in the future is the EBITDA, is the denominator of the multiple. So there are many sources of growth. I mean, even organic, they I think they will continue growing in Europe, which is their main market, and they are doing so this year, the year before, 3 years ago. So they will probably continue growing in Europe, which is their main business and what they are used to do. Now and they grow almost double digit, so that deserves quite a high multiple. And then there are so many sources of potential positive optionalities that are not already priced in, that we feel comfortable paying that multiple. So this is the way we think about the valuation of that company. We don't do DCF. We don't try to reach a certain EBITDA number for the coming years. We just think that the multiple that is priced in right now is incorporating very, very, very conservative assumptions. And we see that the future is probably more positive for Technogym. And not only that, which won't be enough, but also there are optionalities on things that can be game changers. Like if they are able to start monetizing the open platform, which is something that is part of their strategy and that is not priced in currently, that will be a huge value creator. If they are able to expand in the US and China, which is something that is not priced in the moment, that will be a really huge value creation for the future. And all that in a company that is managed by not only by Nerio, who is an outsider, but also by a management team that is full of people with aligned incentives, skin in the game, and a track record of excellent value creation during the last two or three decades. So this is what makes us feel quite comfortable.
Wonderful. Well, we are out of time. Luis, thank you very much for being here and sharing this idea with our members and also talking about your investment approach. We truly appreciate you being with us.
Thank you very much, John.
Goodbye for now.